so you know how stupid Gundam Wing is, right?
Yes.
So they came out with a manga called Gundam Wing Battlefield of Losers, which helps like tie in Endless Waltz much better than the animated series did. And one of the things is the Tall Geese, the original Tall Geese, they had to make it space compatible, and in doing that they gave it the Angel Wings that will later go on to Proto Wing Zero to make it Wing Zero, and it's called the Tall Geese Fugel. It's a very beautiful machine.
I didn't really understand most of that, but
oh wait, I could just show you a picture. I forget I can do that.
That's good. Also, since we started talking Gundam, I've been recording for the last 48 seconds.
Oh really? Okay. Yes. Well then, let me screen share,
and that'll lead me right to our introductory topic for today.
There we go.
How much is this?
$71.
Oh, I'm assuming that's not that expensive.
Not really. It's a master grade, so like master grade can vary depending between like $30 to like 100 and something. So this is like in between.
All right. So let me ask you this then, for our listeners, Phil, what is your dream model kit that if you no longer have to worry about money expenses anymore, you just had like that obscene amount of wealth that you and I will never working comic book artists and teachers and editors, we'll never see that money in our lifetimes. We're not born wealthy, nor are we like soulless tech CEOs.
Right.
So what's like your dream model kit that if money was no object?
If money was no object, my dream model kit would be the perfect grade Exia.
How much does it go for?
I think it should be $219.
For some reason I was expecting it to be more expensive.
No, like perfect, like the most expensive perfect grade would be like the unicorn and the banshee, which I think is like $249, so it's like $250.
Okay. I assume there's like maybe some super rare one that's more expensive, but sure.
Oh, there is. I think it's the perfect grade unleashed version of the RX-78.
What's the price on that?
I think almost $300.
Oh wow, it looks kind of cool, I guess. It's just like clear. Yeah, I don't see what's so cool about it. It's just clear.
It's a different thing. It's clear. Yeah.
All right. Why don't you want this over? How come you don't want this over your Exia? Whatever.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Exia model.
All right. So you have your $200 Exia model, right?
Yeah.
Now let's say I'm gonna take this scenario from Kim's Convenience, which I might have asked you about before with Jordan's, but I'll explain it for you who have not seen the show. You all should watch. Highly recommend. Really hilarious. Simu Liu, now known as, better known as Shang-Chi. Forget it. There's this episode where he and his manager, Shannon, he's trying to, Young is trying to buy his buddy a pair of like these really expensive Jordans that he wants. Mm-hmm. And he finds it, he manages to find it on Craigslist for really cheap. And when they go to pick it up, it turns out the guy is like kind of racist towards Asian people. And like he's always saying some like microaggression, and Shannon's offended, but Young is fine because he's getting the shoes. And then she's like, you know, we're leaving. And every time they try to leave because he says something more racist, he drops the price. And it just is a constant battle of his increasingly racist remarks with the lower, but the doors get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So, Phil, my question to you, that if someone were to offer you this perfect grade Exia for, let's say, 50% off, if you meet with them, they're really racist, how far would you be willing to go for 50% off?
I don't think I have the stomach for that anymore. If I was, like, younger, sure. Maybe. No, I don't think so.
What if it's just, like, mildly racist? Like, you know, you people. That kind of thing.
Oh, God.
It's like, I know you, how you people like this.
You know what? If it was, like, something like that, like a tiny microaggression, maybe
yeah,
I'd eat it.
Yeah, for 50% off. Yeah,
for 50% off, I'd eat it. I'd eat it.
All right.
And then, like, once the transfer of money comes, I'm whooping his ass.
All right. How far would you go for 90%?
No, I can't say that, because I feel like if I were to go 90%, they would have to say the N-word, and if they say the N-word, I'm going to jail.
You cannot be held responsible for your actions at that point. Like,
at that point, yeah.
90% off. Yeah, are you sure? That's like 90% off 200, that's what?
It's like, what, $20?
$20 for your perfect grade, Exia?
I think I'll be all right. I'll go, I don't know, run numbers or something.
What if it's two perfect grade XDS for
See, I don't know, because, like, having two would be kind of stupid, because you don't really, because, like, I want to get into kit bashing, but I wouldn't want to kit bash a perfect grade. I want to leave it in its pristine condition.
I don't know what kit bashing means.
Kit bashing means, like, taking parts from different models and making your own unique model.
You won't sell it. You won't sell it to racists for 90% off perfect grade. Just 50% off.
Just 50% off.
So I guess we're like, you know, polite liberal grandpa level racism. Like,
there we go. Get out.
It'd be like they can go as far as say they would have voted for Obama for their term.
I'm like, that's all good and well, and then give them the money and then walk out. or say, wow, that's crazy. I would too, and then walk out.
What if it's like Atlanta, that level of racism? Like, what do you mean you haven't been tested? You don't know which tribe you're from?
I guess I never thought about that. Because of how ingrained within, like, West Indian culture that I'm in, that I don't really think of, like, you know, the African side of it. So I guess I would be insulted, but then at the same time, maybe I would have the same reaction as Earl. at the end of it, like, I'm effing broke, dude.
If you're so broke, you're willing to take the X over 50% off.
Yeah.
I would ask for 60. I would ask for 60.
You would ask for 60?
Yes.
Like,
I would never go that far for a model, because, you know, I just got mine for free at the Barnes & Noble. So
exactly. Because I mean, like, do you? I mean, you don't even care for mobile suits to begin with. Like, so, like, would that really even apply for you?
Well, I wouldn't be in this situation. Now, if you ask me about magic cards, I'd be totally different.
Okay, see, I'd be completely different.
I mean, totally different quadrant. It would depend. It would really depend on. Yeah, it would depend on the rarity of the card, how much. Because also, I'm really tied in. I really am very familiar with the finance market, so I know what's going up and what's just a short fad.
Gotcha. Well,
I bring this up because I was watching some video essays about Gundam, and apparently, it was actually originally a ratings failure, but the model kits, it's what saved it.
Is what saved it. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, apparently Tamino was like, he wanted this, like, gritty war drama, and then the toy sponsor for this anime is like, no, you gotta make it colorful, like a toy. That's why it's, like, white and blue and red and gold, the original Gundam. And he really disliked it. Now he's kind of okay with it. Decades later, he's kind of come to terms with that.
Yeah.
But, like, originally, it was not a ratings success.
Mm-hmm.
And the toys didn't sell well. It wasn't until Bandai licensed model kits, which were starting to become a thing, and then the older audience who were
watching getting into it.
Yeah, and then, you know, that thing where, like, the show increased attention on the model kits, the model kits increased attention of the show, and we have history. Now we have double O Gundam. We got, you know, war commentary with some other things. Like the last episode, talking about terrorism. Boom.
Terrorism.
What I thought was the first dud of the series so far.
Yes, because, like, it was just, like, blanket terrorism. It wasn't really, like, real terrorism.
Yeah, and it was overdone with, it solved it within one episode. And spoilers for everyone, that they don't ever go back to that in the rest of the series.
No. Because, I mean, the plot twist, boom, for a series that's so old, right? They become the terrorists in season two.
But at that point, we're supposed to feel good about them.
Yes.
All right. So because we're doing
because they're like Robin Hood terrorists.
Yep. So we're doing episode 9 and 10 today. Well, starting with episode 9, The Honor of a Great Power. Damn it. I need to pull up the wiki again because I had it closed. Original air date in Japan, December 1st, 2007. English air date, December 22nd, 2008. I'm trying to recall what these next two episodes are about. And the next one I do recognize what that's about. All right, so this is an episode where they're, like, really stepping up. All the world the various nation states are like really stepping up to take on Celestial Being. And, you know, up until now, they've been kind of kicking everyone's asses. That's going to change with these two episodes here. All right, so let's get started. Everyone following home. We're going to start 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
All right.
It's our opening shot of a graveyard. And we're seeing someone carrying flowers. It looks like, hey, look, it looks like a Lock on Shadows.
It's like,
well, what's he doing here? You know?
Is this Lock on or is it Nile? Lyle.
It says, could this be from him? And then we see, wait, it's another. Wait, that's Lock on too. That turns out, he has, apparently Lock on has a twin or a clone.
Yes.
Because God, it could be a clone.
No, it's his twin.
Yes. And it's the first inkling of any Gundam Meister's family we've seen so far.
You know, this is funny. I'm glad I'm rewatching this because I remember, like, as a watching season two, like, oh man, Lock On is dead. We need to replace Lock On.
Big spoiler, I guess, for anyone's listening for this first time.
Whatever. We need to replace Lock On with another Lock On. What do we use? Let's get his identical twin brother. I'm like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah, so. They call that, there's a term for that, they call it the backup twin. And it's like, it's a little more, I mean, it's pretty lame in general, but it's more forgivable in live action, because that way you get to keep the actor.
Yeah, I mean, right? They do it a lot in soap operas.
But ironically, The Flash does it now all the time with the alternate reality version.
Alternate reality version of, what's his name? Kavanaugh's character?
Tom Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, ironically, like, the original character was gone, killed off. Eobard Thawne got killed off in the first season they come back. But then they just find, like, alternate reality versions of him. And then that's just that Tomorrow does it with time travel versions of him, too. But, yeah. The biggest, the most egregious example I've seen of that trope is in A Better Tomorrow. Where Chow Yun-Fat's character dies in the first movie. And then the second one, his twin brother, who's never been mentioned before, living in America, they go to him. And then as soon as he comes to Hong Kong, he puts on the coat. Then he starts taking all his mannerisms.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just becomes the old character again.
I mean, if it works, it works.
I mean, right. The sequel was a mess in general. I can tell more about that later.
But it was a fun ride, though.
It was a fun ride, yeah. All right, so now there's some, we're seeing some, like, backlash. There's some, like, protesters who are against Celestial Being, and they also have some supporters as well, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, like, cheer the Celestial Being.
Yeah, and then it's, like, it's the first and kind of the really only time, well, no, we see Luis and Saji, the average person's view, but it's, like, you know, we're seeing, like, the global response of that. But as the narration is pointing out, part of the reason why they even have supporters is that they're right so far. There hasn't been any major conflict since they showed up.
Right. And because they're all essentially in a stalemate, because the idea is that the AEU and the Union would say they would only intervene in defensive measures if Celestial Being comes in attack within their territories. But after the embarrassing battle at Morelia, right, and everyone got their ass whooped, they're like, we should think this through again.
Yep. It's also important to point out that the only reason why they are holding back is because they feel they can't beat Celestial Being. The Human Reform League, right now, this scene, is having different thoughts. As Colonel Smirnoff is actually launching an operation to try to take on Celestial Being directly.
Right. And, you know, thinking more about the Human Reform League as, like, a union of Russia and China, and I'm like, I feel like this is a real Chinese move. They're like, wait, the Western world was unable to take down these Celestial Beings? Let's show them a 1,000-year history can do. Yeah.
Yep. And then, for those who couldn't see it because it's audio, and Phil was, like, mimicking that meme of the guy rubbing his hands behind the tree. All right, so here we go. Setsuna docking back with Ptolemy.
Ptolemy,
yeah. The PSI. Named after the Greek philosopher, mathematician, something like that.
No, he's Greek descent, but he was an Egyptian pharaoh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting naming choice for the show. I'm sure there's some meaning for that somewhere.
Probably.
We'll think about it more carefully as we go on, listeners.
Yeah, you know, like now you bring it up, because I never gave it much of a thought, because usually it would be like, you know, you have the White Base or the Argama or the Archangel, and now you got like the Ptolemy as the big ship.
Yep, and before they're just names that sound cool, but now there's presumably some meaning here. Oh, we see the Human Reform League putting the beginnings of their trap in place, and they're launching a bunch of probes that I think what's the plan is that they know that these are communication probes, and that the GN particles that the Gundams displace, they mess with communications. So if I recall correctly, it's the idea that like if there's a blackout, because it means there's a presence of a Gundam.
There's a presence of the Gundam. Yeah, like look at that. That's that reverse talk. Someone in IT was like, "Hey, you guys are stupid. Let's do it this way." Yeah. No, IT would never talk like that. I mean, they would think it, but they would never talk like that.
I mean, I guess IT. That's the thing. IT people, they always have to take up the grunt work on this.
I think that's why I really enjoyed the, what was it called? The IT Crowd on Netflix.
When I first started watching it.
Yeah.
I think that's a, I want to say it was a British sitcom.
It was a British sitcom that they tried to bring to America, but it failed miserably. Like because they got the black guy back, Richard Attard. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he played Morris. And then they had the guy from Community, the white guy.
What's Joe McHale.
Thank you, Joe McHale, as the role of the friend,
aka Starman.
Yes,
Professor Pemberton. Speaking of failing miserably, we have another Saji Luis moment here, see, and Luis's mom is showing up, and we're going right back to our slice of life anime, you know, daughter, you know, the girlfriend's mom, and she's trying to pull her out from some school because it's too dangerous.
Yes, because they go to university, I think they're university students.
Yeah, and she says, "Yeah, your lover is being taken away from you," and she goes, "Our lover." And then he's calling her mom, and this is total slice of life comedy, very out of place in a Gundam series.
You know, I wouldn't have mind seeing this in a build series.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, but this predates the build series by like several years, right?
Several years.
Damn, the audience was not ready for this yet.
Yeah, so that's why they had to divide it up, I guess. See, because I really want to go through. Because Sunrise really needs to start to release like Age and Reconquista and G on YouTube. I mean, I know they have the movies on there, but like the series as well, because like
here we go, we got Marie Ismail thing again. She's the UN ambassador is coming over, and because they're trying to get aid. If we recall several episodes ago, she was trying to get aid for her country, and you know, they were like, you know, sorry, you know, we're in transition right now. We'll come back. We'll keep your resume on file. Come back to us. We'll call you.
You know, that is the perfect summary of that explanation. Yeah, like that was beautiful.
Foreign aid and international diplomacy. And here's a character that we're surprised to see as a UN ambassador, Alejandro Corner or whatever his name is.
Who?
This guy, the Ribbon's boss.
Oh yes. Well, not boss, but they're Patsy.
There we go. We're just giving away season two. But this is the thing: is that this is the first time we've seen him. We've only seen him as this like shadowy figure who's commenting on celestial being. Now we see him in his official capacity as a UN ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
So the plot thickens there.
Yes, it does.
And this is our first real moment with the Ptolemy crew. You know, we've seen Sumeragi and the little bridge crew on Earth, you know, do the beast stuff. Now we're seeing them kind of just hanging out at their job on the Ptolemy.
Indeed. I mean, like, even looking at this guy who's the UN ambassador, whatever his name is. What is his name?
Alejandro something.
Spaniard. Yeah, he just looks shifty.
There's actually a lot of stuff here with the Ptolemy crew, which I actually like. I do like that they take some time to focus away from the Gundam Meisters and on their support crew. Because the Geisters are all like four angsty young men. So we're following people who you actually kind of like.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like for me, like the big draw to Gundam, honestly, outside of the giant, like, wow, cool, giant robots, is also the political intrigue. Because, like, it's a kid show, right? Like, if no, there's no ifs, ands, but Gundam is a show for kids.
It's literally sponsored to sell toys.
Yes. But at the same time, though, like, the storylines that they tell and come up with, like, they give the children leeway into thinking about, like, you know, the processes of war, the animosity that comes within, like, political parties, within a political sphere, you know, things like that.
As well as, you know, there's some, like, mature character development that occurs. Beast Wars, good example.
Beast Wars is a perfect example, especially the episode where the mutant, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
That was a very sad episode.
Yep. So here we go. We see Lock-On comforting one of the bridge crew, and we find out that her family, she's like a generation, though, that her family before has worked in Celestial Being. This is about what I like, because, like, Lock-On is, funny enough, probably the most emotionally stable character.
Yeah, the most human ever, everybody. He's the big brother.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I was going to say the dad, but the brother makes more sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny, he's talking about how they're all sworn to secrecy, so they're not allowed to actually know anything about each other.
But, you know, I guess sometimes when you're trying to eradicate war on Earth, you know, it takes a toll. You gotta vent.
Oh, and then we learned his real name, not Neil Delandy.
Neil Delandy.
Usually from Ireland, which still, point that Ireland exists in the 2300, but not any of these Middle Eastern countries, which are all, like, they mentioned that they all broken up and reformed and broken up again.
I mean, well, when you have a bunch of tribes going to war with each other, what do you expect?
Oh, and there's a funny moment where Hallelujah walks in. And it's like, oh, hey, what's going on? It's like, it's not like that. he's got her hand around her shoulder. And think, you know, why we have all these weird Gundam comedy and slice of life drama? It's because shit's about to heat up right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially with this Pink Terran. I wonder if there's a model kit for that.
I remember we should probably not swear so much in this podcast. The last podcast we swore a bunch. I was fine with that being explicit, but now as I'm finally editing the episodes, I realize, oh yeah, I have to remember that the mark them explicit or not. So we should probably, you know, it's for the children.
It's for the children. Yeah, it's just like Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang's for the kids. So is Mobile Suit Podcast.
Although I was thinking about this as some of the people I work with, and it's like, an analogy I think of, like, these are like the people who would not listen to Wu-Tang because they would listen to the parental advisory. And I was just like, you know, I don't think I would ever trust someone who doesn't listen to a rap song because of the parental advisory.
Right.
But yeah, anyways, they've triggered the trap. They've come across the communication device net that the Human Reform League set up, and they've blacked out, and now they're heading towards the Ptolemy. And they're, you know, kind of looking, they're scrambling here to try to figure out what to do.
You know, I wonder, like, traveling in space the way they do, they have to maneuver similarly how airplanes have to move within airspaces.
I think from what we've seen, they don't follow Newtonian physics that way, which is really weird because it's animation, so you could get away with it. I think it's just a convention, right? Like, same thing in space, we shouldn't be able to hear sound as well.
That's true, but here we hear thrusters and pew pew pews.
Yeah, and they're, you know, when the Gundams are in close contact, they can talk and listen to each other, which doesn't make any sense. But for the sake of drama, it just works.
Right. I always assumed it was just like they're talking through a comm.
Yeah, but you know, in real life, you would never when you're trying to kill someone, you would never spend your time to open a comm to like have your dramatic confrontations.
I mean, they did it in Top Gun.
They weren't talking to the enemy MiGs, though. They were talking to each other.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Speaking of Top Gun, Hasbro released a transforming Maverick.
Seriously?
I'm so serious.
I gotta look it up during our intermission. I gotta look that up.
Yeah, so like Hasbro is like doing a collaboration with movies, and they're making like the vehicles and stuff into like Transformers. So they just did one with Jurassic Park. So they had the T-Rex transform, and they had the Jeep from the first movie transform. And they just released the Maverick's plane from Top Gun as a transformer, because I think the very first one they did was the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Uh-huh.
And then they did the ghost wagon from Ghostbusters.
See, that makes sense. The transforming Maverick. He transforms or his plane transforms?
Say what?
He transforms or the fighter plane transforms?
The fighter plane transforms.
Okay, that makes more sense. Anyways, we're seeing back to the Gundam now. Like they've been out gambited, they've been outsmarted, and that Sumeragi, the tactical forecaster, has tried to hide the Ptolemy on the solar generating things because there's like interference, but they were anticipating that. And it's like the really first time we've seen them, like, celestial beings like really out of what's the word? They're really
out of their depth.
Yeah, like it's like they're really on the back foot in this.
Yeah, because I mean they were caught off surprise, but I mean that was like the guy's fault because he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, well, that's the thing I like in that in this episode, you're seeing a lot of human mistakes, right? These are not infallible. The Gundams might be infallible and invincible, but the people who pilot them, the people in charge of them, are not. And then we see, so yeah, like, you know, she sent out half of them, Tyria and Aulia, out to, like, intercept them, but they were just decoys. So now they're vulnerable, but only Exia and whatever Lockon's... Dynamis, there we go. I remember
Dynamis.
I call it Dynamis, but whatever.
Dynamis, Kyrios,
Exia. Maybe because I'm used to the Japanese pronunciation over the English one.
Oh, I mean, you know, as an old man now, I watch dub.
Yeah.
In order to do other things.
Okay, I was gonna say that's also the only mobile suit names I remember are usually from this series. That's why.
Really? Oh man.
Very, very. We can go over that later, but yeah, there we go. Now they're getting screwed, and the Human Reform League is just like going to town on them.
Do you remember the names of the other mobile suits from like G Gundam?
All right, so let's see. G Gundam. So let's see. There's Zaku. There's RX-78.
I said G Gundam.
I know. I'm just gonna name all of them right now.
All the ones you remember.
They're just preparing. Right. They're just preparing for action. There's not a lot for us to comment.
Yeah, things are fighting, things are blowing up. But yes, continue, Eric. Name the mobile suits.
Gundam, Shining Gundam, Usaki the horse. Probably mispronouncing that. Dark Gundam, Rose Gundam, Dragon Gundam. I don't know what the Russian one. Bolt Gundam. Bolt. I think that's about it. I don't remember the rest of them.
Master Gundam.
Zeus Gundam? Is that the Greek one?
Yeah, that was the Greek one. Zeus Gundam.
Hurricane Gundam. Can't forget that. And of course, Tequila Gundam.
And Tequila Gundam. Let's see. What other one? Did you say Baxter Gundam?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was Buster.
No, it was Baxter.
All right. So there we go. They're going to ram the Ptolemy with something, but... You know, Lockon Stratos, he's got his backup little whatever backup missile things. Something very important to mention is that normally Lockon will be able to shoot them all down, but they mentioned earlier is that they weren't finished with his maintenance. So like something like the leg, or I think, yeah, it's like one of his legs is not finished, so he doesn't have quite stable firing aim like he was supposed to.
Right, so he has to do He has to stay back and be the sniper.
Yeah, but even then, as you mentioned, that his aim is off, or comes up like, or there's like a blind spot on him, something like that.
No, he said it's the adjustment in weight.
Yeah, that's what it was. And yeah, you see, they're in really big trouble because the bridge crew is freaking out.
Yeah, because they're like, oh my god, it's getting so close.
Yeah, and you see, it's really important contrast. The Mycers are like pretty fearless and used to this stuff, but not the crew.
Right.
This is presumably like the closest they've been to actual mortal danger. What other suits do I remember? Wing Gundam? Tall Geese?
Okay.
Sandrock is not the official name, right? Is it?
No, it is. It is.
Okay. I always get confused with Wing because they nickname their Gundams.
The only Gundam that has a nickname is the Shenlong's upgraded version.
See, I don't even remember what it's called, the Shenlong. There's Death Side.
Yes.
Leo. That's so easy to remember because they're just Zodiac.
Zodiac signs, yeah.
Leo, Virgo, Cancer.
Aries.
Sure, yeah, that's about it. Unicorn Gundam? There we go. Unicorn Gundam.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Here's the big twist. The big twist as Sumeragi's realizing to herself that their tactics, they're not trying to destroy them. They're trying to capture.
They're trying to capture.
Yeah, trying to capture a Gundam, and specifically the two other Gundams she sent out earlier. Because they're isolated by themselves, Hallelujah and Tieria. And you see, the twists have really turned on Celestial Being. I think this is the first real tie that they're like completely screwed and got everything wrong.
Yeah. Because this is so, like, which is what I like, because it doesn't show these people as like all powerful. I don't know what happened to me. They don't show them as all powerful beings, right? It shows them like, it shows their very human side and the mistakes they're able to make and like the consequences of those mistakes.
Yeah, especially that their pawns are able to capitalize on them, and that's the end credits because Kirill's. You think he's got out of this, but then, no, he's got the brainwave being messed up with him again because of the quantum soma waves. This is a stark contrast to something like G Gundam, where he never loses a fight.
You know, which
is
funny.
I don't think he ever loses a single fight in that one.
And G Gundam, he, like, loses against Gundam Schiegel?
I don't know which one that is.
The German ninja?
Oh, yeah, that doesn't count. That was his bro. That was his bro, or his clone of his bro.
The clone of his brother.
Yeah. And of course, is a big cliffhanger. The end on the cliffhanger moment.
That's exactly what it is, my head. Like every time I think of like his head like messing up, I think of the I'm the Juggernaut video where Charles Xavier.
I was about to say the same thing. classic meme that really only our generation knows. Not even Zoomer, because that's before their time. It's like people who were like teenagers, specifically when the third X-Men movie was coming out, like early mid-2000s.
Yeah, well, what was it? I was in eighth grade when the third X-Men movie came out.
Oh, yep. Wow. So there we go. Celestial being caught in a trap, and we'll find out how are they gonna get out of this one. And in the next episode.
Right, next episode called Operation Gundam Capture.
Is there anything you want to say? Or should we just jump right ahead?
Matter of fact, let me go ahead and take a quick break so I can take my dog out to pee.
All right, I'll have to edit that out.
Or you can leave it in there.
We'll see what the listeners want.
they want to hear me talk about my dog.
No, we don't.
Like more dog. It's AKA my Soka dog. Yeah.
All right, fine, I guess. And listeners, if you like, he has his own. She has her own Instagram account.
Yes, she does. Tara the Soka dog.
Phil has got his dog taken care of.
Yep.
We can resume our Gundam watching commentary. So next episode, Operation Gundam Capture. Original air date, December 8th, 2007. English air date, December 22nd, 2008. If I recall correctly, this is one I actually like. Yeah, this episode I like quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, especially like the way this opening scene.
Yep. So, we're going to start. 3, 2, 1, let's go.
All right.
All right, so we're not in space again. We're back to, I forgot about this, though. Luis's mom and Luis in her traditional Japanese outfit.
Right. I don't even know where they're from. Where are they from? Are they originally like from the Union or some crap?
Well, I'm assuming that in the Union, right? Because they're American. Because they're American and Japan, so there'd be some cultural intermixing at that point.
Right.
But she's wearing a Japanese outfit, but she's blonde, blue eyes.
Right. So, which usually translates to, like, uber American.
especially at that point in the future, like, those are, because blonde hair and blue eyes are recessive genes, so if going that far in the future, that they would be even rarer, as I understand genetics.
But she has them, Graham Aker has them.
Or maybe they just dye their hair.
And put in contacts, who knows?
Yeah, and anyways, now the Gundam fans who are like happy this weird slice of life opening is back to the battle. it's really, one has to think how much they enjoy. They had to have known how much people would hate these. Well, maybe just Western fans. Maybe the Japanese ones were more.
Maybe more lenient to it.
Yeah. Maybe it fits their taste more.
I guess, because every time I think about it, I think about Gundam Seed. More so than normal, because I'm like, maybe I should go back and watch it. I mean, we will for the podcast, but I'm thinking personally, I'll go back and watch it. But then I think of the, what's his name, Gordon Ramsay meme, where it's like, yeah. Gundam Seed in Japan, like, oh, it's beautiful, grateful.
They're there.
And then Gundam Seed in the U.S., like, you effing donkey.
I might do that next time.
A lot of way more processing power. How powerful was your computer?
It's all right. This laptop, I bought it like for grad school. It's only like a mid level. It's like a fairly budget one.
Okay.
I only paid like $500-$600 for it.
Okay, so it probably has like an i5 in it.
Yeah, something like that. I had the stickers would have told me. I had the stickers.
But you took those off.
I took them off, except for the graphics card one.
So but you know,
it doesn't matter. There's no point upgrading because apparently there's a big processing, CPU and graphics card charge right now.
Yeah, there is.
Not only with COVID and the manufacturing issues, but also because all the crypto booms.
Which really pissed me off
because before that happened, graphics cards were trending downward in price.
Yeah, they were. You can
upgrade to a gaming PC fairly cheaply. If listeners are wondering why we're going on tangents, it's just a recap right now.
It's a recap, and also it was a segue to Asus's special edition Unicorn Gundam graphics card.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, is it? I'm assuming it's just a normal graphics card, but it just has unicorn.
Not Unicorn, it's the Mobile Suit Gundam. So they have two. They have one that's in the color of the RX-78, and then they have another one in the color of Char Zaku.
That's it? It's just a color change? They'll put, E-fins or something like that?
No. Like, how's it going to fit into your thing? And then the Unicorn one is a desktop box with a Unicorn motherboard, and the chip is engraved the Unicorn's face.
The merchandising for Gundam, I'm always just surprised at how far they go.
I remember I wanted a Gundam G-Shock when I was in college.
What?
Oh, G-Shock. It's a Casio watch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Now I used to have one.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing it would have cost way too much for a watch.
I mean, well, like,
which is already a luxury item to begin with.
Right. If I had gotten it like when it first came out, it would have probably been like $150. But then I was just bored. I was like, you know what? Let me look up on StockX how much this Gundam watch would cost. They had it up on there for $1,500.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yep. And here we go. We got Kyrios is being screwed over right now because they threw a net on him. Some of Pyrrhus has literally got her hands around him. And they're realizing that this is the same pilot from earlier who helped with the rescue operation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a moment where I thought, like, maybe it's humanity to be touched and he, like, let him go or show lenience. Nope. It's just an observation.
It's the greater good.
There's also a lot of flashback scenes in this episode, I presume, to save money on the animation.
I don't know, because, I mean, the flashback scenes, you mean, like, flashbacks within the show. Okay, yeah. I mean, like Hallelujah's backstory.
No, there's a lot of flashback scenes to, like, remind the audience something from, like, four episodes ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, probably. That's what those are usually for.
Yeah, saving money. I mean, you can tell right now, this is not a super active battle, so the animation's a little more limited.
Right?
Which is, it makes sense. They spent the money on the first few, and now you're in the middle, they got you invested. We can just save money, you spread that money for the more important episodes towards the end.
Exactly.
Which is something I imagine most people who watch anime don't really think about, because they just don't have that visual eye.
I mean, it's like animation to begin with. Like, you spend the big bucks on the beginning and the very end. And then everything else is like, yo, how can we cut corners?
Well, yeah, I know. It's like they're not showing Exia cutting up the suits that much. They're just cutting from him and the suits shooting at each other. Yeah. But they're just like floating still, and the only thing that has to be animated are the lasers. So this is something. This is like sacrosanct right here. This is what everyone's in shock. They actually got Kyrios into their ship, and they're preparing to cut him open.
Kind of reminds me of like alien abductees.
Yep. And so it's like, oh man, they already got the Gundam, and it's only 10 episodes in.
Yeah, 10 episodes. Wow. So I mean, we are almost halfway through the first season.
Yeah. Yep. We'll be really close to that anime song changeover. Oh, but now their plans are. It's a Gundam. The famous line. It's a Gundam. Famous meme line. You got Tieria blasting his way through. They did not quite account for him arriving on the battlefield so quickly.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't. Take into account Virtue's heavy arsenal.
And of course, Tieria is not being very sympathetic, saying, this is a major screw up, you deserve 10,000 deaths.
Yeah.
It's also his catchphrase in the series, which is, you know, it's no I Am Gundam, but it's not bad.
I mean, or this is no Zaku, boy. No Zaku.
Oh, and here, here's a really good character establishing moment. Rather than try to free him, he's just gonna blow up the ship with Kyrios in it. And even the enemy Human Reform League, they're really taken aback by that.
Yeah, they're like, oh my god, they're willing to sacrifice?
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. If I were ever in trouble, I try to think about like how you define a character. A person is like, if you were stranded on the side of the road, how would they react? I think Tieria would stop just to say it's your fault and then keep driving. it's like, you know, I think Cessna would just never stop to begin with. Neil Delandy, Stalkon would actually, he would get out and help you.
He would help change your tire.
Yeah, I don't know what Hallelujah would do.
Hallelujah will probably help change the tire too, since he was a part of that rescue effort.
But yeah, and then his brain would explode. He's
like, oh my god, this is somebody with other quantum waves.
Yeah, exactly. It would be a fun test to do while the other got the protagonist that test. But here we go. Like Tyrus fighting back against some of Paris, and they got him surrounded, but you know, he outguns them in terms of he's got more firepower, but he's way outnumbered. So right. They're all, both Hallelujah and Tierra, kind of hot water on this. And here we go. I get a little bit of Hallelujah's backstory a little bit more. Never mind. It's just cutting back. Yeah, it's cutting back and forth. So he recognizes her voice, whoever her voice is.
You know exactly who her voice
is. I'm gonna turn the sound back on, because I think it's... Yeah, that's what I thought. It's switching to Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Yes. I'll turn the audio back on for this episode.
Okay.
And this is like a... This is no friendly Hallelujah right now. This is, you know, your dark, evil... The only comparison I was gonna make a Riverdale reference with Betty and Dark Betty, but that would be shameful.
Yeah, that would have gone completely over my head.
Yes. But now, yeah, Kyrios is getting out and just kicking everyone's ass, and they're really shocked by how easily he's breaking out.
Yes. They're like, what's going on? And then everything blows up.
Yep. I have the dub version. I'm assuming the Japanese, I try to remember the Japanese version, they changed their voice as well, right?
Yeah, they do.
I don't remember what the difference sounds like between Hallelujah and Hallelujah.
I don't know. I never watched the sub.
Okay, so like the dub version, he sounds like more. How would you describe the voice change?
More antsy, angry, like.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha!
It's more higher pitch, and it sounds more like sinister. A serial killer or a monster.
Yeah. More like. Okay, good. The dog is comfortable now. I have the dog sitting in my lap.
Okay, thank you for that.
No problem.
All right. The world now they got Thierry out of binary. They're throwing little cable things on him.
Mm.
Yeah, and this is.
Oh yeah, I forgot this is the episode where we get another big reveal.
Yep. The first. Well, I'll go into more about how I feel about these reveals later on. But yeah, like Thierry is really screwed right now. I think this will be interesting. He's kind of the haughtiest character. He's the most arrogant, big asshole of the group.
So right.
This is the first time you're going to see him in a vulnerable state.
It is, because, like, this is not what he himself expected. Because, like, I mean, this is good, right? You have these four Terrians, locking up his arms, and they're shooting this gel-like substance to that harden on contact, or I guess harden within a vacuum in order to lock up his joints.
Yeah, and then they're also like locking down, like physically grabbing his like shoulder cannons, so he just like he's pretty defenseless right now.
Right, but I mean, even then, he's still pushing in order to use the GN particles to his advantage.
But yeah, they're ganging up on him, and they're trying to physically trying to grab something. But now, there you go, Terry's kind of screwed now because he can't form his particle barrier.
All right, because the wires themselves are locking on. So look at him, he's activating his Sharingan.
Yeah, so his eyes are glowing, and like now the mecha, the Gundam is transforming. It's like, oh no, we really didn't expect this.
Yeah. Like, whoa, it's getting naked.
So yeah, it's like jettisoning a lot of the bulkier armor it's slimming down.
And you know, and like
it looks like red, it looks like hair. It looks like hair,
but it's wires.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel about the wires?
I mean, you know, it adds a distinctive look to it.
Yeah, like it's a like it kind of reminds Natalie kind of reminds me of Gundam Nobel.
Hmm. Yeah, it reminds me more like a Banshee, or looks more demonic.
Mm.
It makes it also look more feminine, which kind of makes sense with Tierra looking kind of feminine.
All right.
So if you remember in the first episode, how apparently in pre-production, they were planning to have these Gundams be a chess theme.
Yes.
They literally called them, you know, Pawn Rook. Well, I remember now, I went back and looked back. Actually, this would have been like the queen, not only because he's the most powerful, because also he has this like hidden feminine side, right? Feminine sounding, you know, Natalie.
And then now here we see Terrier crying simply because, oh my god, I wasn't supposed to really reveal Natalie so early. How can I do it, Veda? Why? And he's
that's a kind of like not the first time they've had to reveal something earlier. If you recall, with the rescue, whatever the episode of Curios, he had to.
They had to use Dynamis's atmospheric cannon.
Yeah, and they had to reveal that earlier, and now this is they're forced to reveal all these hidden trump cards in order to get out of situations they were not supposed to be in the first place.
Right.
So we're back to Exia and the Ptolemy and Dynamis. Exia is kicking ass as normal.
Beam daggers.
And there's a big bright light withdrawal signal, so the Human Reform lead is cutting their losses and getting back.
Right, and because they failed their mission, they captured no Gundams, they lost so many people.
Yep.
But and, you know, I guess they can always get more.
Yep.
Since it's a combination of both Russia and China, right? So they just got mad heads.
Yeah, tons of people presumably. They have lots of men to throw.
Yeah.
Yeah, Halia and Tyria, everyone survived, but, you know, I would argue it's like a Pyrrhic victory.
A what victory?
A Pyrrhic victory.
So, can you explain to our listeners?
Okay, a Pyrrhic victory is like from an old Greek tale of, like, a commander named Pyrrhus, where he won the battle, but he lost so many men, it might as well have been a defeat.
Mm.
That's like, yeah, a victory that comes at such a great cost, it doesn't feel like victory at all. And here we go. We got Hallelujah just taunting some of Paris. And, sorry, Hallelujah. Just, the naming conventions are a little ridiculous with the H's and the no H.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, I mean, his name is supposed to be like rejoicing in Christian, I guess, I don't even know what language it is, but like with in terms of like, you know, Christian religion, like that's the term you use as like celebration. But it could go either or, it could be pronounced with the H or with the A.
And then something I like, every time Hallelujah is talking, they make like his molars a little more pronounced. It looks like he has fangs.
That's not molars, it's canines.
Whatever, incisors, canines. I don't know anything about teeth, all right.
Come on now, man. Do better.
Hey, screw you. But here we go, yeah. There's a soldier who's going to sacrifice himself to let them all get away. But he's got Hallelujah here, and Hallelujah is not having it.
Yes, and he does this, he does the shark kick and pinches him with his shield.
Yeah, it was here, pincher thing. And we see here, Hallelujah does not fight like Hallelujah. Hallelujah, you always hear him feel a little regret when he's like bombing or doing his combat. Mm-hmm. Hallelujah clearly enjoys, relishes the bloodshed and the fighting.
Disrupting the order of the society we've built. Stop bragging about your damn country.
Yeah, I actually like this. I really like this moment a lot. Cause he's like, he's presumably the enemy, but he's doing this like noble sacrifice.
Yeah.
So our sympathies have been upended. Now we also have our hero, but now we have his evil side, his like crazy side. So it's like our sympathies are kind of switched around this scene. I really enjoyed this a lot.
Mm.
He's clearly just like taking his time torturing
this human reform league soldier, this Lieutenant Ming, whom I'm very sure we've never seen his face.
Yep. And it really makes you question, like, you know, who is this? Should we really be rooting for this Hallelujah person and celestial being?
Right. But at the same time, we have to remember, this isn't Hallelujah. This is.
Yeah, Hallelujah, whatever. Right.
Yeah. You know, we can tell because of the flip of the hair.
Yeah. But yeah, I love this scene a lot. And then, like, now they're debating internally, and he's trying to convince him to just let him die and stop, knock it off.
Mm.
And no, he's not having it. But also, like, Hallelujah is convinced that Hallelujah enjoys this more than he pretends to. This is always the big thing with him.
Right. Are you watching it subbed?
I'm watching it dubbed.
Oh, okay.
I guess next time I turn the audio, I could watch it subbed just to see what it's like.
Yeah, that difference.
But yeah, there you go. It's that's very very kind of the awkward after battle stuff. Tyrion is crying, and Hallelujah's got his crazy demonic evil side.
Mm.
So wait. This is very gut the wing right now. A lot of men crying. Oh, angsty men shedding tears. And there we go. See Ptolemy and Exia and Dynamis picking them up. And yeah, oh yeah, no, they see Nautilus. So they know things have not gone as well as they should have.
Right. I mean, everyone's safe, but at what cost? What cost?
Yeah. They're all deeply, deeply traumatized and this is I think I guess to talk more about the whole Nodley thing is that the first it's like they get out of it with like this unforeseen, you know, almost you go one can argue it's Deus Ex, this unforeseen hidden sleeve or power of the reveal. Mm-hmm. And the problem as the series goes on, especially season two, is they rely on that a lot.
Yeah.
It's like unrevealed power that gets them out of their situation. And it's like the first time is cool because it makes them feel like, you know, they just got so many contingencies and saw a lot of things coming. Then it just feels like a cheat, you know.
See, because like within season two, right? Because I mean, this is something they still continue on because like each Gundam has its own like special ability, upgrading from virtue to. I don't remember the name other than Double O.
Whatever it's called, yeah.
And using them over and over again, so like they'd be all right. Because now it's like Virtue's upgrade, whatever that mobile suit, I can't remember, right, does an even cooler thing with its dual mode.
Yeah, and then, but even towards the end of this first season, there's a big moment where I felt like this is a little absurd. They're cheating. So,
I mean, well, yes, that I would, yes, that is an extreme cheat.
Yeah. Actually, I think maybe even the same episode, like Tieria also reveals another hidden ability he has, and then not only that we've never heard of his ability before, he doesn't even get to use it. Yeah, there's, and this is kind of like one of the fallacies of the Gundam franchise in general, the lesser series. They fall into a lot of, you know, upgrades and plot power, new powers that the plot demands, and you know, it becomes less about the characters and more about just like something cool on the mobile suits,
right? Because you know you got to sell toys.
Yeah, you got to sell it. So you got, so the other, now you got the Virtue. Now you got to get the Virtue model kit and the Nautily model kit. Because I'm assuming, why would they make it transform when you can just sell two separate ones?
You could make it transformable, but if you want to display both, you have to buy two.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If you want, you want to have both at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, see, there we go. So, perfect plan on the toy maker's part.
Yeah, because I mean, think about it too, right? Because like the Wing Gundam, right, is able to transform from its bird mode to its robot mode. What if I want to see both bird mode and robot mode? What do I have to do? I have to buy two.
Yeah, it's like in Power Rangers when the Red Rangers just start getting like halfway through the season this special armor.
Yeah, their Battleizer.
Yes, yeah. I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to admit that I remember it, but I do.
Oh, I mean, like I used to watch Power Rangers well into my college years, so I don't care. It has giant robots in it.
All right, and that was episode 10 of Double O Gundam. Mm-hmm. Two pretty good episodes overall. A lot of action, a lot of like nice military battle, Celestial Being finally starting to get what's coming to them.
Yes, simply because of the what's it called? Because of the world can't take it no more. So we gotta fight back. We gotta fight the power.
Yep, and they're actually doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
But also this is the beginning of like, you know, this is starting to be the beginning of what's going to be the series' downfall. The very first appearance here with their special powers that let them get out of certain situations. Well, we'll talk more about it when it gets to be more, a little too much. It's always really funny with a long-running franchise when you start to see the things that will later... It's like, the perfect example is the Simpsons episode, the monorail. Yeah. Like, that's a great episode, but it also has all the elements that they took it to, like, they become increasingly outlandish, they become more reliant on celebrity guest stars.
Oh, celebrity guest stars, yeah.
But it's okay in the monorail, because it's done so well, and they didn't overdo it. So, it's always really funny to see the point in a franchise when they start to, you know, when the flaws start to emerge, but they're not there yet.
Mm. Yes, so that's our coverage for Mobile Suit Gundam 00, right? Yep. Episodes 9 and 10.
Yep, and that concludes our episode of Mobile Suit Podcast. I think this will be... I'm going to try to make it, so this is the episode where we finally launch, if you can get me that art I was asking for.
Yeah, I know.
Art, so I'm in the middle of it, ending everything up, so... Hopefully by the time you people appear this, the podcast is live. Until then, on that note, I'm Eric Wong.
I'm Phil Fleming. And our Gundam of the day is
Mobile Suit of the Week.
Sorry, I said Gundam of the day. Mobile Suit of the Week. All right, we're going to another alternate timeline. All right, is the Oz 10 VMS MSX, aka the Gundam Ascalpulus. All right, which is coming from the Gundam Wing franchise, but not from the animated series, but from the side story manga called G-Unit, which takes place on the further reaches of space, where they are developing two other Gundams on a colony, and Oz is trying to steal them. But the Escapulus is the upgraded version of the Geminis number 2 and is piloted by Odell Burnett. And the most interesting thing about this mobile suit is that it has a high mobility form and it has a close combat form. So within its high mobility form, it looks like a regular Gundam with added parts. And it also has a purple accents going around within its legs as well as its boosters. And it uses the PX system, which is a system used to increase the adrenaline of the pilot while in combat in order to make quicker decisions. So you could think of it as like a less traumatic Zero system that you see in the original series. And when you see it transform from its high mobility form to its close combat form, it gains essentially a helmet that goes over its head, and its shoulder pads turn into claws, and it more or less looks like a Zagak from Mobile Suit Gundam in the Universal Century.
That's this sounds like a more obscure one compared to what you've mentioned before.
Yeah, this is very, very, very obscure. But the only reason I mention it is because P. Bandai just is releasing a new HG model for it. So I was like, oh, this is neat. I never thought about this before.
I see.
Yes.
Good to know, everyone. Good to know.
P. Bandai, cut the check.